Now joining us, our Sportsnet hockey insider. Every Monday he joins us. It is Chris Johnston. CJ, what's going on? And I'm already seeing the comparisons made to the New York Knicks draft of many years ago with the NBA. What do you think?
I think people got to get out of the house more. It's summer. there's things to do. I mean, let's do it this way. If the NHL wanted to rig this, why would they even do it live on TV the way they did? I mean, most normally, as you know, with the it's all done behind the scenes, and you have to go find a link on the website to even watch it play out. I mean, if they wanted to rig this, this would not have been the way they did it.
But the ball dropped. The guy dropped the ball before it happened.
Dropping the ball.
No, it is over the top for sure. It is the New York Rangers landing the number one overall pick. Rangers had, by all accounts, a very promising season, the first for Artemi Panarin. But, you know, you look at the squad that they've built, a lot of the first-round draft choices they've made haven't panned out, at least not yet, the way that they had hoped. This is really going to be a huge boost for what Jeff Gorton is building in New York.
Oh, it's massive. I mean, they made the big move to bring Panarin in and give him, you know, the monster contract. But, you know, the success, the key to becoming a Stanley Cup contender is having this layer of players under him that you know, come along and become stars. And, you know, I'm not in the junior ranks. You know, I've only watched Alexis Lafreniere play on TV, you know, mostly at the World Junior Tournament. But it does seem that the people that do follow these guys think that, you know, we're talking about a special player here. And you know, I know it was a difficult first NHL season for Kaapo Kakko, but I think it would be unwise to make any big, proclamations about the last year's number two pick in terms of what's going to become of his career. So I think just adding those type of players to, you know, and don't forget Adam Fox, who had a great year as well. You know, he's an older rookie on their blue line. So, you know, I think that they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. And you know, we all know, too, when it gets to the right time, it's not an organization afraid to spend money or be aggressive in free agency. I mean, they're going to, you know, give these guys everything they can around them to have a chance to win. And you know, one thought that occurred to me here, I wonder if we're seeing kind of a passing of the torch, because, you know, Henrik Lundqvist might be seeing his time end as a Ranger, and obviously for a good long time he's kind of been the face of their franchise. And you know, at the same time, you now have Alexis Lafreniere walking to the door and might be ready to take on that mantle.
CJ, you kind of mentioned it there and with, you know, the passing of the torch, but I think back to when Toronto got the Austin Matthews number one pick. And organizationally, there was a lot of pessimism. You know, that was after Jeff Horacek was coach, the interim coach, and it just overall, there was a lot of pain in the market. What did a number one pick do to the market to re-energize an organization? Maybe it's not in the same place as the Leafs were back then, but just overall, what does a number one pick do to an organization and the vibe around it?
Well, I think it gives you hope. And you know, as a sports team, you know, the saying goes, you're either selling winning and the possibility of winning a championship, or you're selling hope. And if you're not doing either of those things, you're in a really terrible spot. And you know, I think fortunately for the Rangers, to be honest, that they haven't had as long a down period here. I mean, remember, it was a couple of years ago that Jeff Gorton, their general manager, put out a, you know, basically in advance, a press release saying we're gonna start selling players because, you know, this isn't good enough. But, you know, they were a fairly competitive team as recently as, what, 4 years ago? You know, they were in an Eastern Conference final, I remember, with Tampa, the year that Tampa went to the Cup, 2015. So, you know, 5 years ago. But it hasn't been the sort of thing we saw in Toronto, you know, where, I mean, that's kind of a touchy subject on this day, given what happened over the weekend. But, you know, in general, things have gotten a lot better here with the team, and there's been a lot more to be excited about. But there was a lot of years where that they just seemed 2 years away from being 2 years away. And so I do think that this will be, I mean, to me, this could be the kind of push a team like the Rangers need to get really good quickly. Because, you know, I think that they were on their way this year. I know they were swept by Carolina in this qualifying series. But, you know, they've got a really good top line with Zibanejad and Panarin. And this gives them, you know, a piece in the top six that's going to be, you know, in at a nice cap number. That I think just can keep rounding them into a team that's going to be very difficult to play. When you think of a young goalie and Shesterkin coming in and taking over, when they have defense pieces like Adam Fox. I mean, they have elite looking young players at every position. And, you know, that's ultimately how you sculpt the championship. You know, as we're seeing for some of the teams that are a little further down the line, like the Leafs, it's hard to go from good to great. It's a difficult next step, but you know, I think that this is going to be a good team as of next season.
How are, or how have been GMs and owners reacting to, I guess, since the moment that we knew one of these play-in teams was going to win the first overall pick? You know, it's a pretty damn good team that's winning this. And it could have been Pittsburgh, who was on pace for over 100 points. I mean, I can't imagine too many owners are looking at this, especially those of the seven teams that missed out on the playoffs are too happy with how the lottery is shaken out this year.
No, they're not. I mean, but they all agreed to it, too. I mean, this was...
Right. Is there an appetite to change it, I guess?
I don't think so. I think everyone's viewing this as like a one-off crazy year. And in fact, right. I think the Rangers winning, you know, probably lessens this a little bit because, you know, the Rangers were a team that I don't think was going to make the playoffs in a 16-team playoffs. I mean, there's no way of knowing that. They'd played a little better when the pause came about, but they were outside the top eight in the Eastern Conference at that time. And so, you know, if we can imagine what might have happened in the last 10 or 12 games of the season, you know, I think it's totally plausible that they were going to miss the playoffs and be in the lottery anyway, and then they would have had a chance to win the lottery. And it is called a lottery. It's meant intentionally not to just reward the teams that are historically bad. So I think that there's a little bit less sting with that than if it was a team like Pittsburgh, which was legitimately a top team in the regular season, and then to a lesser degree teams like Edmonton and Toronto, which were, you know, pretty squarely among the better teams in the league or the good enough teams that they wouldn't have even had a part in this lottery if the crazy scenario that we're all living with has come about. So you know, I think that this is a good win for the NHL on a number of levels, you know, getting a potentially marquee player in a big market. And, you know, it's not completely just, especially if you sat through a lot of Red Wings games or Senators games this year, or Ducks or Kings, or, you know, these teams that haven't even been invited back, but at least it's not quite as, I don't even know the right word for that, but it's not quite as offensive if, you know, one of the good teams that had a bad playoff series had to win it.
You're listening to Reach Deep. We're joined by Chris Johnston, our Monday NHL insider. Chris, here in Vancouver, we're focused on the St. Louis Blues, and the next matchup for those Canucks is the St. Louis Blues. You've been watching a lot of hockey, a lot of round-robin series as well. What should the Canucks expect from the Blues, who have been playing games, but they don't look like they're the most competitive games?
No, and you know, I think that that's why the start of the series will be imperative. And, you know, that's something I would say for any of the teams that have come through the qualifying round and are going to get a round robin team. You know, I think that there's going to be some kind of adjustment in there. And you know, this is such a strange thing for those teams like the Blues. You know, it's a veteran group. And, you know, obviously they went and won a Stanley Cup last year, but I don't know how they're feeling about this one. I mean, I think there's opportunity there, but the truth is you really want to go in and, you know, not let them get to their game quickly, not let them get ahead in the series, because I think that that would be a tough hill for, you know, a team in Vancouver's position to climb. But, you know, all opportunity is there. I mean, I don't think that there's all that much correlation between what we saw in the regular season and what we're seeing now. I mean, there's some. A team like Philadelphia, for example, was red hot the last, you know, month or two of the regular season and is, you know, been one of the impressive teams in the round robin side here in the Eastern Conference in Toronto. You know, there's some of that, but I do think teams like St. Louis and Boston, for example, that were, you know, played for the Stanley Cup last June, that were two of the best, absolute best teams in the regular season this year before the pause. I mean, we haven't seen them quite back and look exactly where they were. And so, you know, if they play long enough, they'll probably get to that. And the goal for the Canucks is not give them a chance to play long enough or to get ahead, to get confident, to feel good in their systems again. It's to try to disrupt that. And I think, you know, I think it's very possible for them. I was impressed with the way the Canucks came through that last round.
Yeah, and, you know, Quinn Hughes was incredible in Game 4. Elias Pettersson has, you know, continued to do his thing. But when you look at St. Louis and you look at this Canucks team, you know, we've had this thought, CJ, that they're kind of built for the playoffs. You know, Jim Benning really made a focus of, you know, Brandon Sutter and Jay Beagle and these role players that fill certain roles in the playoffs. when you get into a short series, can you see that coming together a little bit more than maybe you do over the full 82?
Well, for sure. You know, one of the lessons for me out of the Blues Cup win is, you know, heavy hockey still has a very much a place in the game. And you know, I'm more probably of someone who really appreciates the skill and you know, love seeing all these creative players come in. But I still think that there's a level of commitment that it takes to win the Stanley Cup that you know, that there is a little bit of measure there beyond just who can, you know, acquire the most talent or individual skill and go on a run. And so, you know, I do think that there's a place for some of those guys. And I understand why those types of players, you know, they're central to the debate. They're kind of being run down in a market, especially a passionate market like Vancouver at times, because, you know, obviously their production doesn't tend to be great in measurables. They you know, in some of their cases, they're getting paid, you know, money on the salary cap that's going to impede other decisions or make other things difficult. But that doesn't mean once we get into the playoff series itself that they can't make a difference. You know, I was just came out of covering the Toronto Columbus series, and you know, Kyle Clifford and Jason Spezza, who are, you know, at this stage of their careers, absolute fourth liners, not making much money, were made a difference for the Leafs, for all the talent the Leafs have in the game where they managed to come back and force the game five that was played last night. I mean, I do think that you see that around, and it helps keep some of these guys in a job, and it's not an easy job to fill. And I think especially against a team like St. Louis, that's going to really come at you, want to get on the forecheck, you're going to want to give it back to them a little bit. You know, it's natural to think that, you know, the Pettersons and Hugheses are going to get extra attention and they're going to have to fight through it, you know, as they do during the regular season too. But you kind of want to give it back to the other side and try to wear down their defensemen, especially and you know, allow for offensive zone shifts. So, you know, for me, there's still a place in the sport for that. I think the challenge when you're building a team is finding the right mix, finding the right cap commitments, making the proper decisions with those players. But, you know, I don't think four all skill lines is winning a Stanley Cup at this point. I mean, we might get there in the future, but I just don't see it with the way the game's played right now.
Well, CJ, you mentioned the Toronto Maple Leafs. They get dropped by the Columbus Blue Jackets over the weekend. A lot of speculation, a lot of chatter, as one would expect coming from Toronto. What's your sense here? Do you think they're going to really tinker with the organization as far as the players and movement will be a big storyline in the offseason? Or do they give this core, especially that big four, another kick at the can?
I think it's a little too soon to say definitively one way or the other. You know, obviously there's a pretty big debrief that goes on in every organization when you hit the end of the road, as they did. They're going to look back at the series specifically. I'm sure they'll, you know, look back at why the regular season went as it did, because I think a lot of the reaction you're seeing today in Toronto is it's not just about, you know, the 5-game series loss to the Blue Jackets, which wasn't great, but, you know, this was a team that really didn't meet its own expectations throughout the regular season either. There was a lot of ups and downs. You know, they wanted to establish themselves, I think, as a top five, top six, you know, elite team in the regular season. And they're, you know, they just weren't there, especially defensively. I mean, they scored goals at a rate that very few could, but, you know, they were giving up a lot of chances and allowing too much in their own end to be considered among the best teams that have a chance to win the cup. So, you know, my personal view is that I think they're at a spot where they have to make that kind of move. You know, I say that knowing it's going to be very difficult to do, but, you know, when you see them come up against a team like Columbus, which, you know, Columbus scored 57 fewer goals than the Leafs through 70 regular season games. I mean, it's clear where each team had an advantage heading into that series, you know, Columbus being much better defensively, Toronto having offensive stars. Well, the Leafs offensive stars, even without playing poorly per se, you know, weren't enough to make the difference, weren't enough to find ways to punch through. I mean, they were shut out in two of the five games. And so, you know, I just think that it's a roster allocation debate here. Can you have $40 million tied up in your four top forwards and still expect to build a good enough team around them to win? I think the results are increasingly pointing to no. And when you couple that with the fact that the salary cap is really, there's a huge drag on the cap by the effects of this COVID-19 pause and the new CBA, you know, the Leafs aren't going to get any relief from that, or they can't count on that for at least a couple of years. And so, you know, that's why it's not a knee-jerk, you know, suggestion I made in my post-game column last night. I mean, I just really believe they have to prioritize getting some top defensemen or a top defenseman. And the only way to do that I see is it's both in, and you might be able to accomplish it with a trade, but at minimum, if you trade, you know, one of your forwards making decent money, you know, you now have the cap space, say, to try to go after it. Now it's Pietrangelo or do some other things that might work. And so, you know, I don't think anything, it's still a fresh enough wound that I don't think Kyle Dubas and you know, the Leafs management group has come up with their exact direction. But I think all those conversations are now on the table because they can't afford to be patient.
CJ, appreciate the time as always. We'll be looking forward to hopefully a lengthy run here from the Canucks.
Yeah, I'll be watching. When's game one? This is all passing in such a blur. I can't keep track of the schedule.
you don't even have a sense of time anymore. Wednesday at 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific, here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Those are my favorite games at that hour because everything's quiet. I can just watch on the couch, maybe have an adult beverage, and just watch the game. So I'll be watching Wednesday night.
Sounds good, CJ. We'll talk next week.
Okay, guys. See ya.